Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome Long Beach to another edition of Swoop's World right here at blogtalkradio.com. Swoop's World, where you get all you need to know about arts, culture, news, and happenings here in Long Beach. Our number, if you want to call in, is 917-889-7449. You can email us at swoopsworld@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook. Once again, you want to call in tonight, that number is 917-889-7449. Sit back and enjoy another edition of Swoop's World. Hey, and welcome Long Beach and all of Southern California to another edition of Swoop's World Primetime. How's it going, Peter?
It's going pretty good. How are you, Swoop?
I'm doing great, man. Looking forward to tonight. We have a couple great interviews. First, it's Marty Rulli, and she wrote the book Goodbye Natalie, Goodbye Splendor.
Yeah.
And it's about Natalie Wood. And you know, remember a few weeks ago, we were here with I believe it was with Stefana, and I mentioned Natalie Wood, and our good fellows from Long Beach Food Review said who? And I was a little surprised at that. You know, yeah, they're younger than us, but
they are
a lot younger.
It's an interesting story. It's one of those, as far as I'm concerned, one of those unsolved deaths. You know, it's considered a closed case, but
definitely suspicious.
But yeah, there's some issues raised in that, as far as I'm concerned. And so after Marty is on, we're going to have Lisa Hernandez from the Long Beach Depot for Creative Reuse, a good friend of ours, and doing a lot of good things down here in Long Beach. And they have a special day coming up, so she's going to tell us all about that.
Very cool.
How's your week been?
Not too bad. We got some water falling out of the sky today. Very unusual for us. But other than that,
a little rain for SoCal.
Yeah, yeah. And then they had an interesting article in the Times today about how much Long Beach is used for filming, which we've talked about that many, many times.
I see them all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. But they listed a whole bunch of different shows. I thought that was kind of interesting. So if anybody wants to know what sort of stuff's being, one thing I did know was that we watched Star Trek, and apparently part of Star Trek was filmed in the City Hall.
Oh, really?
City Hall was, what was it? It was supposed to be some sort of control room during the movie. You couldn't recognize it at all, but I thought that was kind of interesting. Didn't know that.
I know the dome's been used, spruce, where the Spruce Goose was.
Oh, yeah.
They've used that for Batman and some other things, too.
Yeah, so, soundstage.
Yeah, so Long Beach gets quite a bit of filming going on there. You know what we should do? Let me just mention a few things. We're going to we did the UNICEF benefit on Sunday.
We did,
and that turned out pretty good. And apparently, I saw a post from Marianne that she reached her goal. She reached her goal that night with people who actually donated online.
Okay,
as well as those who actually showed up. So congratulations to that.
Yeah.
What we'll do is we're going to take our first break, and then we're going to come back and introduce our first guest. How's that sound?
That sounds excellent.
Right. Hi, I'm Ryan Seacrest for RAD. Over 300 people in this country are killed every week by a drunk driver. That's the equivalent of 2 747 plane crashes every single week. And the problem isn't going away unless we all do our part to stop it. So if you see someone who's about to drive after drinking, get the keys. Don't leave it up to anyone else. Friends don't let friends drive drunk.
A public service announcement brought to you by RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
I bet you're wondering, hey, Swoop, what is that going on behind you there? Well, I'm over here at Powerhouse Fitness, and what's going on behind me is an indoor rowing class. And what you're hearing in the background there is music going on at about 30, 32 beats a minute. That whirling sound of the fans of the flywheel of an indoor rowing machine, Concept 2. And that voice, that's Jack Nunn. He's teaching one of the classes here. So many classes going on here. The rowing core, beats per minute, rowing burn, rowing coach, you name it. The spin class, Zumba classes. They got the core arc workout. And two locations, 5750 Boathouse Lane, 1347 Loma Avenue for the warehouse location. First class is free. Come on out, good friend of Swoop's World. Come on out, meet Jack Nunn, meet some of the other instructors here. So many of the instructors are U.S. national team rowers. You're going to burn 800 calories an hour and, get your groove on. And I'm going to get back on here and jump on one of these rowers and get my sweat on. So, hey, he's yelling at me. So I'm going to have to get back really here pretty soon. So come on down. Check out a good friend of Swoop's World. Check out Powerhouse Fitness. Like I said, tell them Swoop's World sent you. First class free. Check it out. And I'm going to get you back to the show. But I'm going to go ahead.
Imagine no longer being tied down to your computer, but having the freedom to take live talk radio with you anywhere you go. TalkStream Live introduces our first ever iPhone application. The talk shows you follow now follow you. And your iPhone is now the fastest and easiest way to stay connected to the best talk radio on the internet. Let TalkStream Live transform the way you listen to radio. Listen to live talk shows 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Mobile talk radio from TalkStream Live. Now available in the iTunes App Store.
Hey, this is Sharp on the Wall. You're listening to Swirl.
Hey, welcome back to Swoop's World. If you want to give us a call, the number is 917-889-7449. The chat line is open. You can always follow us on Facebook and Twitter. And if you ever want to send us an email, it's swoopsworld@gmail.com. Our guest tonight is Marty Rooley, and she wrote a book based on the death of Natalie Wood. Natalie Wood is one of our beloved actresses here in the U.S. She originally made her start in Miracle on 34th Street, which was when she first had her big break. She was in West Side Story, Rebel Without a Cause. Made 56 films and had 3 Oscar nominations before the age of 25. Let me bring on Marty. Marty, how are you tonight?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you so much. You know, this is one of those events in our history where it's been questioned since the day it happened. Tell us about what got you started and how you got involved in writing this book and interested in Natalie Wood.
Well, I always had an interest in Natalie Wood. She was one of my favorite actresses since I was a child. But I happen to have had a longtime friendship with Dennis DeVerne, who, of course, was Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood's yacht captain, the Splendor. And Dennis was the 4th person on board the weekend that Natalie died, and he had worked for the Wagner family for 7 years by that time. And the other 3 on board, of course, were the married couple, Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood, and her co-star in Brainstorm, Christopher Walken. And Dennis is the person who was awake and was an eye and ear witness to what led up to Natalie Wood not being on the yacht any longer. And I was shocked to hear that Natalie Wood had drowned, and then to hear that she was found floating in the ocean in her nightgown and a coat and socks was just made the entire scene so much more bizarre. And I expected to hear from Dennis, but it took over a month, and I knew that things would have to quiet down before I would hear from him. But
right.
What shocked me even more was when I did hear from him about a month after Natalie died, his complete demeanor had changed. He would not mention anything about the weekend, and I suspected that that's what the attorneys would have asked of him, but nothing. He said nothing to his mother, nothing to his family. He was a different person, and that made me suspicious of what really had happened to Natalie, but I never brought it up to Dennis. I let him handle it in his own way. And then about 2 years after Natalie died, that's when I became directly involved, because I received a phone call in the middle of the night from Dennis, and he had been drinking, but he was ready to spill his guts. He couldn't hold it in any longer. He said that he suggested that, insinuated there was something sinister involved in Natalie's death, and he asked me to please ask him anything. He wanted to tell me what really happened. And because of his state of mind, I was very worried for him, and I just thought it might be better at that time to ask him to tell me something more pleasant, to tell me about working for the Wagners. And that's was so long ago. That was in 1983. And
right.
It's been an incredible journey since, trying to get this story out there to the public or to the authorities to have them finally give this case the serious consideration it really truly deserves, because there was virtually no investigation into Natalie's death. It was more or less treated as a celebrity scene. Robert Wagner was told to go home and grieve. He was given a pass. He was not interrogated. When the lead detective in the case, Razor, went back to Wagner's house 2 days after Natalie died to question him, there was a lawyer present and no information was given, just a flimsy, we don't know what happened. Walken was allowed to go home. They were flown off the island on a helicopter, and Dennis was left behind to identify Natalie's body, and it ate away at him for years.
Yeah, you know, it was very interesting reading your book, and I like to say it's a very, very well-written book, and I really, really enjoyed reading it. What I found very interesting was the fact that they did let them leave right away. They didn't separate the parties that were on the boat.
And
I also found it, I understand everybody grieves in their own way, but we can go through a lot of steps. There's so much information involved. But the fact that he pretty much made Dennis do the identification of his wife, I found a little startling there also.
Yes, and Natalie was found with over 25 bruises on her body, and not one of the three male survivors, Wagner, Walken, or Dennis, were checked for corresponding bruises, and they were treated as if it was the accident that Robert Wagner said it was. And there were so many red flags, but what happened was the detectives didn't work together with the medical examiner's office. No one worked together. There was misinformation put on reports. The first person on the scene was one of the authorities named Pam Eaker. And on her report, it said that help was called immediately for Natalie. It actually took 4 hours for the professional Coast Guard help to be called. And what was told to the Coast Guard team is amazing. But as you said, we'll get into that. There are so many layers and aspects of this story. It's so convoluted with so much misinformation out there. But in fact, it's rather simple. Natalie Wood did not get drunk and fall off of a yacht.
Right. Well, let's back up just a bit. How did Dennis come to working for the Wagners?
That's a pleasant story. That's the nice part of the story. Dennis, he was adventurous, and we both lived in New Jersey, and he traveled to Florida and met a man who bought boats on the East Coast, cruised them to California, to the West Coast to sell them. And Dennis was hired to take the cruise. And it was aboard a 60-foot yacht fisherman named Dizzy Izzy. And when they got to California with the boat, it took 3 months for the trip. Dennis was really happy to be there. And his job was over, and he started living on a boat called the Ramblin' Rose, owned by Bob Rose. Bob Rose told Dennis that the Wagners were yacht hunting, and that he would probably meet them, and that they had been married on his yacht in 1972 for the second time around. Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood were married twice in the 50s, and then they divorced, and then they remarried in 1972.
Mm-hmm.
So Dennis lived aboard Ramblin' Rose, and they changed the name of Dizzy Izzy to Challenger to help sell it. It was a nicer name. And the Wagners bought the boat. They met Dennis when he was hired by who they had hired another captain, and that captain hired Dennis to work on Challenger. And the Wagners, every time they showed up to look at their yacht, to see their yacht, they would see Dennis working on it, and they immediately they liked him. They wanted him to be their captain. They fired the original captain, who never took them on a cruise, and Dennis got the job. And he became, over the years, he became a family member to the Wagner family. He was close to all of them. He babysat the girls. They let him live on the yacht. As a matter of fact, he was living aboard Splendor the weekend of Natalie's death. And he just enjoyed those 7 years. It was a dream job. And they liked him. He loved them. And he never, of all the people who were shocked by Natalie's death, I don't think anyone was more shocked than Dennis himself.
Right.
He just never saw anything like that coming.
So, you know, he became really, really close, and he's treated like a family member and such, which probably, because I know some of the questions that people will have is say, well, why did it take him so long to come forth? Why didn't he not say something the day it happened? But was it because he was so close to them that he felt that
his loyalties were split. There was a lot he witnessed. There was a lot he had to process. There was the memory of Natalie tearing at him. There was Natalie's daughters involved, what would happen to them. But the main thing is he was so stunned and so shocked. And right after Natalie died, after they found her body, when Dennis was taken to the Wagner home, the attorneys were right there. And one was, Wagner had his attorney, and they hired another one for Dennis. And there were many conversations and little meetings. I mean, you would think right after your wife is gone, that wouldn't be your priority. But it was a big media frenzy. I can understand having the attorneys, but they actually instructed Dennis to never say anything more than what they were going to write in a report. And he was told he would be taken the next day to sign the papers and never answer any questions. He was scared.
Right.
He sensed what really, from what he saw and what he heard, he knew something was terribly wrong with what happened to Natalie. But he didn't know what to do with it. And it took close to 2 years for him to finally decide he couldn't live with himself if he didn't talk about it. Now, a lot of people challenge why the 30-year wait, but of course it wasn't a 30-year wait. It took 30 years. Through the years, Dennis did talk with some reporters, and he did a Vanity Fair article in March 2000. Sam Cashner wrote the article. Dennis was not paid for that article. He just thought that would put it behind him. The truth would be out there for anyone who cares. But it didn't work that way. There was always people calling, always people wanting to know what really happened. And every time we tried to work with the authorities, which was many times, the lead detective in the case was right behind Dennis, calling him a liar, calling him a drunk. I mean, because Dennis, everyone was drunk that weekend. But, you know, to label him as a drunk, a lifetime drunk, it was not fair. It was not accurate. And there's just so much involved with why this story didn't get out there. And it finally took one brave publisher. We were left with the only means of having a book published.
Right.
And we really hoped and believed that would alert the authorities, that they might come on board it's virtually a case study of what happened with the investigation, with actually what happened to Natalie Wood that night. And we're still ignored, but there's a petition to reopen the Natalie Wood case now, and there's a lot of good people who care about this case, and we are going to officially ask for this case to be reopened.
Well, let's back up just a little bit. Let's start with this weekend. Apparently, Dennis really was not wanting to go out to Catalina this weekend because of the weather. Is that correct?
No, he did not. It was a dreadful weekend. It was one of those cold, rainy weekends, and not usual for California, even in November. it was bitter rain, drizzle, and chilled. And Dennis was, he lived on the yacht at that time. And on Thanksgiving night, he was sitting on the boat, and he even decided to buy more heaters for the boat. It was that cold that weekend. And he called Natalie, and she was having her traditional Thanksgiving dinner. And Lana said it just wasn't the usual festive night that Natalie had on Thanksgiving. It was very tense. And Natalie that weekend was on break from filming Brainstorm with Christopher Walken. And they were in California. They were going to finish up filming after Thanksgiving weekend at MGM Studios. And they had just been filming in North Carolina for 3 months. And Natalie, she had planned the weekend to take Christopher Walken, her co-star, to Catalina Island for early Christmas shopping, dinner, and that was customary. The Wagner family always did that with their co-stars. It wasn't anything different. And Natalie did like Christopher Walken. She liked acting with him. They were making a movie that wasn't going to go far, and they both knew it, but they were making the best of it. And but Dennis, because of the weather, he called and he tried to talk Natalie out of not going. And she said she had already planned everything. They were still going to go ahead with the plans and to be ready at noon the next day. And on Friday at noon, the trip started, and there was tension from the moment they walked onto the boat. And Dennis, he felt it, and he just tried to make the best of it.
Now, what was it? What was the tension from?
It was Wagner's jealousy of Walken filled the yacht. It was obvious he wasn't pleasant to Walken, and it just seemed to be building and building. And Dennis was really afraid there was going to be a fist fight at one point, but they cruised to the island, and Wagner wanted to go to the more remote part of the island, but Natalie, she wanted Avalon. She was having a social weekend, and she couldn't understand why her husband wanted to go to the part of the island where there was nothing but one restaurant. So they did go to Avalon, and Christopher and RJ and Natalie, they went to Avalon. They had dinner, not dinner, they had lunch, and they Christmas shopped, and they asked Dennis to have dinner ready for that evening. And everything seemed okay when they returned from Avalon, but it was probably about 10 o'clock at night when Wagner decided in the pitch black night he was going to move the boat up the island. Up Catalina Island, he was going to go to Two Harbors, and Natalie wouldn't hear of it. The water was a little choppy that night. It was cold, and it was dark, and she didn't want to move. She wanted to wake up in Avalon the next morning. That escalated, and Robert Wagner, he started gunning the engines, and he was cursing and saying he didn't care. He was going to move the yacht. So Natalie asked Dennis to take her ashore, and Dennis and Natalie ended up spending the night together in Avalon that night.
Now, some people have questioned him spending the night with her, whether that they had an affair or a sexual relationship. What did Dennis say about that?
Well, Dennis was with Natalie as her friend and confidant. Natalie was really upset, and they had stopped in at the Pavilion Bar first, and they did have a glass of wine there. There were a lot of people who saw that it was Natalie with Dennis. And when they did get the two rooms, they stayed at the Pavilion Hotel. They had stopped in at another bar. And when they got the two rooms at the Pavilion Lodge, Natalie was just worried about staying alone because the rooms faced a courtyard, and some people had seen them go to the hotel. So Dennis, he stayed in Natalie's room with her, and they did sleep in the same bed, but there was nothing sexual about it. It was just a friendship, and Dennis was there in a bodyguard capacity, and they talked throughout the night. They stayed up for a few hours, and Natalie was really upset, and she really confided in Dennis that night about her anger over her husband's drinking and the way that he was, his treatment of Christopher Walken on this typical cruise they would normally take. And she became so angry that she decided she was going to try to catch a seaplane in the morning and just fly home. And she tried to get in touch with Lana, and I believe she made a few other calls, but that I learned that from another book. She had told Dennis she was only going to call Lana, but she couldn't get in touch with Lana. So in the morning, she decided that they would go back to the Splendor, and as much as Dennis didn't want that, he had to go along with it. Natalie still is his employer. So they went back to the Splendor, and everyone just seemed like nothing had happened the night before, which was somehow scarier to Dennis than anything. He just wanted the cruise to end. And he asked Wagner, please, let's just head home now. It was the cruise from hell. The tension was that thick. It was that horrid. And Wagner said no. Natalie wanted a cruise with Walken, and she'll get what she came for. And they went to Two Harbors at the Isthmus, and they moored there. And by this time, Natalie, she was still feeling angry about what had happened the night before, and she took a shore taxi to the island with Walken, and they went to Doug's Harbor Reef Restaurant, which is the only thing at that place at that part of the island. And then a little later, Dennis and Wagner joined them for dinner, and the dinner was tense. Natalie wanted to stay at the restaurant. Wagner wanted to go back to the boat, and it was probably about 10:30 when they did head back to the Splendor, and Natalie was ready to socialize for another hour or so, but that was quickly interrupted by Robert Wagner just losing it. He totally lost his temper, and that's when he smashed a wine bottle on the table and came right out and accused Christopher Walken of wanting to bed Natalie.
When that occurred, now according to the book, the glass, the bottle shattered, glass was everywhere, and that was not cleaned up, correct?
No, not touched. Never so questioned by the authorities.
So it was still there the next morning when the police showed up.
Yep, and the lead detective in interviews throughout the years, he just shrugs his shoulder and says, glass breaks, you know, there's rolling seas. It's there's so many details to this story.
Well, after Wagner lost it at that point in time, did everybody just kind of move their separate ways, or did they stay up and drink? What happened after that?
Christopher Walken, he was so startled and shocked. Everyone was shocked when the bottle broke. And Walken stepped outside just maybe a minute and then came right back in, did not say a word, and went straight to his cabin, which was forward. And he shut the door, and he was not seen until the next morning. Natalie said something to the effect to RJ that she was mortified. She says she would not tolerate this, that this was it. He had crossed the line. And she went to her stateroom that was the master stateroom that was toward the end rear of the boat, between the main salon and the rear deck was the master stateroom. And she slammed the door. She was angry. And Wagner, about 10 minutes later, told Dennis that he was going to go try to talk to Natalie. And Dennis even suggested he leave her alone. But Wagner went to the master stateroom. Dennis made a cup of tea for Natalie, not really expecting her to come for it like she normally would. But as he was making the tea, he started to hear the yelling, and which he expected to hear. But then it started to get out of hand. This was a terrible argument they were having in the master stateroom. So Dennis went, and he knocked on the stateroom door, and Wagner opened the door. He didn't hear Natalie at that point, and Wagner wedged himself in between the door, and he told Dennis to go away. He said, "Everything's okay. Go away." But he said it in a miserable tone, and Dennis didn't believe him. But Dennis went away, and he was told by his boss to go away. He's still thinking it's just an argument, and which he expected. So Dennis went up to the bridge, and when he was up on the bridge is right above the master's stateroom. So when Dennis was on the bridge, that's when he started hearing things hitting the walls, things being thrown around, and right under his feet. He said the rumble and the arguing and the screaming, he heard it all, and he really got worried. And then... But he didn't want to go. He didn't know what to do. So then the argument broke out to the back deck, and it was in the open air. And Dennis was really concerned that other boaters might hear the argument. So he, at that point, turned on the music. And the reason he did that was only to try to protect this couple that he loved and respected. He didn't want other people to hear them. And the arguing continued, and Dennis looked out, and he saw Natalie in her nightgown. And he could still hear them arguing, and he just waited until it stopped. And then a few minutes after he thought it stopped, he turned off the music, and all was quiet, and he decided to go down and check everything out. And when he went down, he met up with Wagner on the back deck, who was frazzled, sweating, nervous, and shaking. And he said, "Natalie's not on board." And he insisted that Dennis go check the entire yacht, and which Dennis did. And he half expected to find Natalie in his cabin, which was as far forward as you can get on this 60-foot yacht. But Natalie wasn't there, and then Dennis was really nervous, and he met up with Wagner again in the wheelhouse a few minutes later, and Wagner told him that the dinghy was gone. And the first thing that Dennis wanted to do was to turn on the searchlight and to call for help, and Wagner refused to let him do it.
Well, you know what? It's a good time for a quick break. We have to take a break. And
okay.
Let's take a break and then come back from there and go on with where it went from there and then how the investigation was run.
Okay.
Thanks, Marty. You're listening to Swoops Road on Blog Talk Radio, and our guest tonight is Marty Rulli, the author of Goodbye Natalie, Goodbye Splendor, and we'll be right back after a few messages. On this week's Friends of Swoops World segment, we spotlight two local businesses, Alfred's English Gardens and Richco Gates. Kathy Alford of Alford's English Gardens was recently chosen by the City of Long Beach Water Department to help educate homeowners about alternative low-water garden options. Visit the website and click on eSmart Gardens for case studies and photo galleries of gorgeous gardens in Long Beach. Go to www.kathyalford.com. Richco Gates. Richco is a local builder that specializes in locally handcrafted outdoor woodwork built specifically for each client. Richco believes in doing a great job and having fun in the process. He builds gates in a variety of styles. Check out the photo gallery at richcogates.com for more information. If you'd like to become a friend of Swoops World and have your business mentioned on our air, send us an email at swoopsworld@gmail.com. And back to our guests right after this.
Hi, this is Ozzy Osbourne. For many years, you know I've had a drink problem, and I'm trying to battle that problem every single day. But one thing I don't do, I don't drive my car when I'm drinking. I get someone to drive me. Do not drink and drive. It's the stupidest thing. If you drink, just don't drive. Not only are you going to hurt yourself, you may hurt some other person, and you wouldn't want that on your conscience, would you?
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hey all you out there in Swoops World, this is Rob from Night Views Radio, reminding you to join myself and Travis every Thursday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Pacific Time on ztalkradio.com for Night Views Radio. You're not going to want to miss this show. We talk about some of the hottest topics, hot button issues, and we also chat with some of the most well-known celebrities, musicians, entertainers, newsmakers, comedians, whoever it is, we have them here on Night Views Radio. So make sure you join us every Thursday night at 11 p.m. Eastern Time, 8 p.m. Pacific Time, only on ztalkradio.com. For more information on our show, go to nightviewsradio.com.
Hi, this is Barry Rolera. You're listening to Swoops World.
Welcome back to Swoops World on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to give us a call, the number is 917-889-7449. You can reach us in the chat line. Chat line's open, and you're welcome to join us there. Our guest tonight is Marty Rulli, author of Goodbye Natalie, Goodbye Splendor. Welcome back, Marty.
Thank you.
We left off with right after Wagner told Dennis to check the whole boat, and then Natalie's missing.
Mm-hmm.
And according to the book, after that time, he decided to sit down and have a drink. Is that correct?
Yes. He opened a bottle of scotch, and this really confused Dennis. And at this point, Dennis's mind was racing. He could not understand why he was forbidden to put on the searchlight. And Wagner poured him a drink. And he was nervous. They both drank. And this was when Dennis started wondering what was really going on. And he suspected something, but he really couldn't believe what was happening. And all he could do at that point was hope that Natalie was with the dinghy, in the dinghy, and not in the ocean. And the sad part is that there was a witness, Marilyn Wayne, who heard a woman right at the time Dennis had the music on, and Marilyn Wayne heard music. She believed it was coming from the shore, but most likely it was the music coming from the Splendor, and she thought there was a party going on, and she heard a woman crying for help, "I'm drowning," over and over for 15 minutes, and she heard a man's voice say, "Hold on, we're coming to get you." But Dennis did not hear that. He was 15 feet above them on the bridge with the music playing. But he could see through the isinglass window surrounding the bridge that Robert Wagner and Natalie Wood were still on the deck. He knew they were on the deck. He just didn't know what was being said, and because he had the music playing right near him. And it was on pretty loud because he was trying to cover their yelling. But Dennis, when he asked Robert Wagner about calling for help, Robert Wagner sat down and explained to him how he couldn't. He had to protect his image, the bad publicity. They couldn't draw attention to the fact that Natalie was missing in the ocean. She has a known fear of water. She said it in so many interviews, how much she feared deep, dark water. But she liked being on a boat, but she just really was petrified of water. And Dennis knew this. I mean, it was Natalie's greatest fear. I mean, all of her fans, her true fans, knew about it too. Every time she talked about it, she had just told the New York Times a week before how afraid of water she was. So Dennis knew something was wrong, but he went along with Robert Wagner. Now, he was confused. I mean, this was the couple he worked for 7 years, and he loved both of them, so he went along with what Robert Wagner wanted. Now, Natalie went missing. Marilyn Wayne heard Natalie between 11:06 and 11:20, and they did call for help. They didn't have a dinghy that they could take out, to try to help the person crying for help. And they, Marilyn Wayne and her party, they just hoped that the woman they heard crying for help had been saved. Dennis, who wanted to search for Natalie, was told to wait, and at 1:30 in the morning, Dennis finally convinced Wagner to get on the radio. Wagner went on a local frequency and said, "Someone is missing from our boat." He didn't give any details. And a few people picked up on that, and they came out, and Wagner told them that Natalie was missing, so they started a makeshift search. A couple of restaurant workers and the restaurant manager, and they finally got the harbor master involved, and they all used boats. They were on the water. They were searching the island. There was no sign of Natalie. It wasn't until 3:30 in the morning, approximately 3:30, that the Coast Guard was called. And that's a whole other story itself, but it took 4 hours to call for the proper kind of help with your wife missing in the ocean.
Now, and, is it? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No. If you have a question, that's fine. Yeah.
No, I was going to say, is there any chance that his lack of concern was because he felt that she wanted to get off the boat and she took the dinghy to try to head ashore?
There was nowhere to go on shore. The restaurant was closed and everything else was campgrounds. There was really, and no one on, it was a rainy, cold night. And Natalie did not know how to operate the dinghy herself. When it was running, she may have been able to know how to get behind the wheel or to take photographs. But Dennis said that Natalie never used the dinghy herself. And that's what made Dennis question where she really was, what was really going on, because he knew she was in her nightgown, too. Robert Wagner knew that, and socks, no shoes. And it's just a bizarre thing that Natalie would be in the dinghy, but Dennis had to cling to the hope that she was.
Now, my understanding is also that the spotlight on the dinghy was inoperable. So even if somebody took the dinghy out, they wouldn't be able to see where they were going. So it wouldn't make sense to take it out. Is that correct?
Right. When they came back from the restaurant, the headlight, Wagner held a flashlight while Dennis operated the dinghy. And that was never even questioned. There were no questions asked about any of the normal procedures or how the dinghy was tied at the rear of the boat, which, you know, the going theory for Natalie's death is that she got up to fix a banging dinghy that was disturbing her sleep, which is absurd because the dinghy could not float away. The authorities never questioned any of these things, but the dinghy was tied at the rear of the boat with two lines, at two cleats about 12 feet apart. And if you untie one rope, the dinghy can't float away because it's tied 12 feet away, but to another rope. And even if that theory had any clout to it, if Natalie had slipped while retying the dinghy couldn't have floated away with her.
Right.
There's all kinds of things like that, evidence that was just never questioned or never investigated. And now the authorities have the opportunity to know these things, and Dennis is willing to cooperate with them, and yet they still look the other way in this worst investigated case in American history, in my opinion.
Now, my understanding is that the coroner at the time, Thomas Noguchi, kind of accepted some of the statements as fact, and he made a ruling, but later on he wanted to change his ruling. And
he retracted it.
Subsequently got him fired?
He was fired. He did reveal some of the true facts about what happened that night. He's the one who reported that there was an argument on board and the detectives immediately said they don't know where he got that information from. But in fact, Christopher Walken did mention that there was tension and an argument on board. And that is in the police report, but they never questioned, you know, how extensive the argument was or what happened, the shattered glass. The stateroom was a total mess, as if there had been a huge argument in there. There are pictures, there are actual photographs of what that stateroom looked like, and no questions were asked about this. And they didn't interrogate Dennis, and in his position, Dennis probably, if he had been taken in for questioning, would have offered a lot more than he did, but he was so controlled after the death. I mean, he lived at Robert Wagner's house for a year, and Robert Wagner got him a job as an actor. I mean, that's bizarre right there. And Dennis didn't really want all of this, but he was going along with the program. It ate away at him, and it changed his personality. And until he left California about 3 years after Natalie died, he was not the same person that he always was. It took its toll on him. But back to the coroner. The coroner was fired for giving facts about what really happened that night. And there was a lot of pressure from the celebrity community that the coroner was too egotistical and getting too involved in the personal lives of the celebrity deaths that he talked about. There were lots of cases that Coroner Noguchi had worked on.
Right.
But he really was the one who wanted to do the psychological report. He wanted the truth about Natalie's death, but he was fired for wanting that. And he made some huge mistakes, too. His theory was that instantly her down jacket weighed her down in the water and she drowned quickly. And in my amateur investigation, I put on a down jacket in water. A down jacket is what you would want to be wearing if you were ever trapped in the water, in any kind of water. It turns you into a buoy. You can't even try to sink yourself when wearing a down jacket, and there's many cases that has proven that. It's not just my little test that proves it. Natalie floated. The currents took her away, and she was floating away from the yacht. But with the jacket on, it insulated her a little bit more than if she hadn't been wearing the jacket. She was floating, and after the first copy of Goodbye Natalie was released, the hardcover, the Coast Guard captain who retrieved Natalie's body from the water, I finally had the opportunity to talk with him. And there's a new epilogue in the paperback version and in all the Kindle and e-download versions now about Roger Smith, the captain's story. And he's the one who brought Natalie's body in, and his professional opinion is, as I feel, that she lived through the night. I mean, it's just unbearable to think about this woman deathly afraid of water who had to float in it through the night. And Roger Smith believes that she died just shortly before he got to her body. And the coroner, his theory about the down jacket is totally wrong. A down jacket out of water only weighs 15 pounds, not 50. So he made mistakes. And his explanation for Natalie's bruises are that she was clinging to the dinghy and trying to mount the dinghy and therefore acquired all the bruises on her legs. But where these bruises were on Natalie's legs, she would have been in the dinghy if she had hoisted her body up that far to get into the dinghy to get those bruises. And another thing, she was found with her socks on. How could something that blaring get past the medical examiner's office, not just Noguchi, any of those doctors? If she was trying to mount a dinghy for hours, she could never have been found with wearing her socks. They come off within minutes when you struggle in water, and I did test that too. So these are the things that I did myself as an amateur, just someone who was trying to substantiate my friend's account, and none of these, the detectives and the medical examiner's office, none of them went this deep into this case, and I can't understand it. This should have been done for anyone found in this position, but we're talking about Natalie Wood. You would think she deserves justice and a case study just like anyone else who dies under those same circumstances.
Yeah, what has been the response over the years? I know you said that the primary detective always comes behind and calls him a liar and stuff like that, but what has been the response from these departments, these agencies, as to why, I mean, some of these basic police work, basic detective work, was not done here, and why hasn't some of these agencies decided to take another look at their own investigation?
I guess it's easier for them to blame the messenger. I don't know. That's what baffles me. It boggles my mind. I just can't understand why they wouldn't want to correct this piece of Hollywood history that deserves to be corrected. Dennis DeVerne passed a polygraph test on everything, and there's, you know, we're only touching on a few things here,
right.
that you read the book, Swoop, so you know all the different layers and aspects involved in this that are incredibly, you just can't understand how the media, especially the media, is there a new breed of journalism here? I don't know what is going on. I don't know if it's because it's easier to blame the messenger, is it a 30-year-old case? What good can come of reopening it? How about justice? Justice for one and justice for all. And Natalie Wood, this esteemed, iconic actress, who would deserve the truth attached to her death more? It just boggles my mind.
One of the things I also found interesting about this entire thing, you know, Dennis told the story for many years, stopping right where the bottle broke, or where Wagner broke the bottle, and that's kind of where he would end up. And it didn't. And according to the book, it wasn't like he was out searching to tell the story to anybody to profit off of it, but yet he was always getting death threats, basically, or having people warn him not to say anything.
He was warned a few times never to say anything, and that carries over to this day and age. I have a writer friend who wrote a manuscript involving Natalie Wood, and this was just last year. And she went through all the right channels to do what she's doing, and she did get in touch with Wagner's attorneys to let them know what she was doing. And, I mean, she'll attest to this. I have everyone who is in my corner is willing to sign affidavits to submit to the authorities to take polygraph tests like Dennis has. But my friend, when she contacted them to let them know what she wanted to tell from her research, she was told if she ever tries to get what she's doing published, she will regret it for the rest of her life. And that was just last year. And Dennis, whenever it came upon the publicity about an interview he might be doing, and we did a few TV shows together, and we were never paid for that. And one time we did Geraldo's news show, the Now It Can Be Told show, and Geraldo had a panel of three attorneys, and which we were supposed to have with us on the show, but it didn't turn out that way. But they all agreed that this case needs to be reopened. And Geraldo Rivera actually submitted everything to the authorities, and no matter what questions they have about Dennis's credibility or who I am or who Dennis is, they should listen to this information. Because it's not just Dennis now. There's Marilyn Wayne, there's Roger Smith, the captain. There's so many other people involved who know. And Lana Wood, who last year came on board with us, and officially she told CNN she wants this case reopened. And the CNN reporter who worked with us last year contacted Detective Razor. Now, he's older. I don't know what is going on in his mind now, but he just said last March that we have it all wrong, and Natalie's death, as a matter of fact, that was a weekend that she was celebrating having learned to swim. It just can't get any crazier sometimes, I think. And I just hope that one day soon, and I would really love it to be this year, coming up on the 30th anniversary of Natalie's death, that someone will agree to take a look at this case. It really deserves it, and Natalie deserves that too. So
I agree with you there. I think it definitely warrants another look. There's just too many loose ends, too many things that just weren't taken care of. Should, you know, if nothing else, it needs to be looked at a second time. So I want to give you the opportunity, because we're short on time, and there's just so many things to cover, and we couldn't cover them all, and we would have a four-hour interview. But was there anything very specific that you wanted to let the listeners know that we didn't cover?
Well, the main thing that I hope to accomplish is to draw interest to this story, to maybe have people just care enough to take a minute to go to gopetition.com and sign the petition to have the case reopened. You can sign anonymously. You don't have to give your name, but you do need a valid email address. That's the only thing required. You can leave a comment. Many people do. They're compelling comments at this petition. And it's going to be turned in soon. So I would really hope that people would just care enough about the injustice of this case to sign that petition. And there's you can follow Goodbye Natalie at Twitter, or Twitter at Goodbye Natalie. And I do have a blog, Marty Rulley, MartyRulley.blogspot.com, and you can follow the case there. And my publisher, E-Reads, and that's E-Reads, R-E-A-D-S, they have an interesting blog about the book, too. And there's just so much more. There's a lot of aspects to this story. As you said, we've touched, you know, basically about what happened that night. But there's so much more about this story, and I just really hope that even after 30 years, people will care about Natalie Wood, because she's a legend, and Hollywood lost one of their best when they lost her, and her death deserves to be looked at again.
Absolutely, and Marty, I want to thank you for coming on the show.
I thank you so much for having me, Swoop.
Absolutely, and you know, keep us informed on what's going on. I encourage all of our listeners to take a look at this book, read this book. If you know of Natalie Wood and you're interested in Natalie Wood, or if you're just interested in what occurred this weekend, this Thanksgiving weekend back in 1981, it's so much information in there. It's a well written book, and I encourage everybody to take a look at it. And the links to Marty's site should be on swoopsworld.com if you didn't get those, and we put them in the chat line also. But thanks so much, Marty, and stay in touch.
Okay, thank you very much.
All right. You're listening to Swoops World on Blog Talk Radio, and if you want to give us a call, it's 917-889-7449. That was Marty Rulley, author of Goodbye Natalie, Goodbye Splendor. And just so much information on this case and what happened in the years that followed that we just don't have enough time to touch on it all. But hopefully we'll get her back on in the future and pick up where we left off. Our next guest at 9 o'clock is Lisa Hernandez, owner of Long Beach Depot for Creative Reuse. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to come back and bring on Lisa.
Piece of music is played with only two instruments, a right hand and a left hand. Hands can do incredible things, but nothing compares to using them to help save a life with hands-only CPR. If an adult suddenly collapses, call 911, then push hard and fast in the center of their chest until help arrives. Hands-only CPR is recommended by the American Heart Association, and it's incredibly easy and effective. Find out more about this latest method of CPR at handsonlycpr.org. The power to help save a life is in your hands. A message from the American Heart Association and the Ad Council.
Hey, Swoop here, letting you know every one of our shows is archived, and you can find them all online. If you missed a show or one that you want to definitely hear again, you can find them. And where can you find them? You can find them right here on Blog Talk Radio under Swoop's World. You can find them at swoopsworld.com. You can find them for free on iTunes. You can subscribe to our RSS feed. You can go back and listen to who? John Nunn, Olympic medalist, Jack Smith, Academy Award winner, Grace Slick, rock and roll superstar, Michelle Mangione, Tom O'Keefe, you name it, we've had them, man. J. Ross Perelli. Now, I mean, there's just so many people. I can't name them all. I'm sorry if I left somebody you love out. Go to swoopsworld.com, look at the list, go to blogtalkradio.com/swoopsworld. Just scroll on down, see what you got. But they're all archived, and they're all there for you, the Swoop's World listener, to go back and check out and listen to again. So check out our archives, go back and re-listen to some shows that you've missed, and some that you haven't heard, because they're there, and they're going to be there for in perpetuity, as they say. So check those out, revisit them, and like I said, you can always subscribe to our RSS feed, or you can always subscribe to them on iTunes, downloadable for free, and hey, thanks for listening.
This is Last Day Off, and you're listening to Swoops World Radio.
Welcome back to Swoops World on Blog Talk Radio. If you want to give us a call once again, it's 917-889-7449. You're listening to Swoops World Primetime, and at 10 o'clock, it'll be Swoops World Late Night. And we'll be over on Z Talk Radio at that time. And we've also picked up another night. We're on Thursday nights on Z Talk from
4 to 6,
4 p.m. Pacific Standard Time at 6 o'clock. So check us out there, too. So right now, is, our next guest is Lisa Hernandez, and she's the owner of Long Beach Depot for Creative Reuse. How you doing, Lisa?
Hi.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for inviting us.
And you brought your daughter along with you, the resident artist?
Yes, Yoshino.
Hi, Yoshino. How are you tonight? So tell our listeners about Long Beach Depot for Creative Reuse and what it's all about and what you do there.
Well, we're the first creative reuse shop in Southern California and the only one right now. And also we're the smallest in the country, believe it or not. But we do have bragging rights right here in Long Beach because we're the only one that has a thank you card from the President and Mrs. Obama. We also just recently received Pepsi Refresh Grant to host the first ever Creative Reuse Day celebration.
And that's coming up in about a week or so, right?
Yes, February 27th.
Absolutely. That's great. So tell everybody what your shop actually does and what goes on there. And I've been there many times, and we know you real well, but let our listeners know what it is.
Well, picture a place that's small, a little shop, that has all those things that you just, you know, just can't find at the local thrift stores, but it's just too good for the trash. So we have bottle caps, we have corks, fabric samples, and misprinted items, and just all those little things that you just really can't find anyplace else. And a lot of people think that it's junk, but we like to say that it's items that you can creatively reuse, and that way you can help reduce all those things that end up in the landfills by creatively reusing it. So we're reducing our waste by reusing what we already have.
And most of your most of the people who come there, are they artists or kids with school projects? Who uses your shop?
Well, we get a lot of artists, a lot of students, especially from Cal State, Long Beach, yay! but we also get a lot of college students, even from Fullerton, from Dominguez, and all over different parts of Southern California. We get a lot of eco-crafters and also teachers and just a lot of people, actually, because we're the only place that even guys will come in and they just need that one nail.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to have to buy the whole packet. So they can come in and rummage through our little nail bin and they'll find that one nail for a penny and save a lot of money. So we get just about everybody that comes in there is just from all walks.
And I noticed that every time I go in there, I'm amazed at what I find. Picture frames or knobs for the drawer, or I was looking for just something odd once. I just needed something to make tops for one of my son's projects, and you had these little square wooden, I don't even know what you call them, just little square wooden pieces, about a half inch squared, and it was just what we needed. We didn't know what we needed when we walked in there, but he goes, that'll work right there. So it's great. I love it. I love the variety of things that you get in, and it changes constantly, doesn't it?
Yeah. We always get things in daily.
Yeah.
So we actually have customers that come in every day just to say, okay, what's new? What is it that, okay, let me see what you got.
And how do you acquire most of it?
Actually, now it's all purely donated items from people that are downsizing and they want to close their storage I guess the storage bins or what, you know, and then their homes. We get businesses that have downsized or they're closing and they want to get rid of items and they don't want to throw it away. Recently now, we even have some items that were donated to us from the city of Long Beach even. And so they're getting on the bandwagon. But we just get, you know, from all over, just even crafters that have just a lot of little bits and pieces and they don't want it thrown away. And, of course, the thrift stores won't take it. So we gladly accept those items. So we've been getting so much that now we have to actually, believe it or not, ask people to just bring a bag or a box per visit because we were starting to get, like, truckloads of stuff, and we kept accommodating.
Well, how did you come up with this idea? Is it a unique idea, or have you been to some place similar before? Or?
Well, actually, my daughter and I, we were from the Bay Area. I grew up in the Bay Area. And in San Francisco, there's a place called Scrap. And then in Oakland, East Bay Area, is the East Bay Depot for Creative Reuse. And when my daughter was small, I used to volunteer a lot in the school for the teachers. And so I would go to those places to pick up items, you know, like toilet paper rolls or whatever that they needed for the projects. And it was pretty good to go there. However, they're big warehouse types of, I guess, shops, if you will, if you want to say that. And so one of the things that struck me was that it was just this, like, coldness, this lack of community, because you go in there, you get your stuff, and you leave. So it's like going into a big business. So when my daughter and I moved down here about 6 years ago now, believe it or not, 6 years, I was in between jobs, and, you know, I'm a 40-plus person, and actually I'm going to be 50 this year. I really needed a job. And so my daughter just said, you know, Ma, why don't we just have our own little shop, and let's just do something. And then I had an epiphany. I said, wait a minute. Long Beach wants to be green. Okay. And all of a sudden, memories started coming back to me. And there was a story when I was a kid called Mr. Myrtle's Large Heart. And it was about this little man who had a little store that had all those tiny little things that you just can't find anyplace else. And I remembered that. And I said, wait a minute, creative reuse. I can put this store together. Yeah, I think we can do it. So I told my daughter, you know, we might have to eat a lot of rice and beans for a while. Are you down for this? And she said, yeah, Mom, let's have our own little shop, because then she can invite all her own friends over. And then she's an artist in her own right. She's got talent like you would not believe. When we sent the president the gifts that we got the credit card for, she created the CD Yo-Yo. So Sasha and Malia, the president's daughters, have their own CD yo-yo that she created. So that's why I started it. Was I really needed a job.
Yeah.
That's how some of the best ideas get started. Yeah. Gotta make some money. Something you like. That's a great idea.
Well, then,
how'd you settle on the location you did? And then how did you actually get started? Because I got to believe, like you're saying now, you're turning away truckloads. But I got to believe in the beginning, it was a little bit tougher to figure out, like, what can we put in there and where can we get it? And you'd have to get it cheap because that's the idea behind it all, right?
Right.
So what was the next step?
Well, believe it or not, I think I mentioned to you guys, I was a prior military. I was in the Air Force. And one of my positions was inventory management. I was known as the scrounger. But I grew up with a dad who was always accumulating and getting things. He was a magnet for things like that. And so it was kind of easy in the beginning to accumulate these things because I went on eBay and I went on different other sites and bought it wholesale costs. And also I just met some wonderful people. One of them, his name is Victor Fukuhara, which was a wonderful mentor for me, and he knew a couple companies that had all this scrap stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, oh yeah, get scraps and get pieces and get misprinted items and get just a bunch of stuff, you know, that these people just throw away, and I know two companies. So he hooked me up. So that's where I first started getting my scrap metal,
mm-hmm,
and also the cardboard cutouts and the synthetic leather scraps and so forth. So it's just one of the little companies right on the west side. It's called M&G Industries, and they're a gasket company. So that's where I accumulated a lot of stuff, and then I went, like I said, shopping on eBay and wherever else that I can get little things from.
Yeah. And you've been open how long now?
Going up 3 years.
And cool. And it's my understanding that this Pepsi, the city is named today in your honor, right? Is that how that works out?
Yeah, actually, we got the mayor to, Mayor Bob Foster, to proclaim the day, February 27th, as Pepsi Refresh Creative Reuse Day.
And what's going to go on that day?
Oh, it's going to be a nice block party. However, sorry, no liquor. And actually, we're not even going to have outside food vendors, because one of the other things that I noticed about different events is that when they invite outside food vendors, the local businesses hurt. Mm-hmm. And so one of the activities that we're encouraging everyone to do at the event is to go to the other businesses all around. So we have little markets. We have Zephyr's Vegetarian mm-hmm. Cafe. We have Fingerprints around the corner. We have Lion Art Supply. And then we also have a new little bookstore called Secret Passages. So we're calling them the mainliners, because we are actually going to color code on the ground with colored duct tape, subliminally sending people to these different places, because they're also going to do their own, creative promos also. So we're kind of spreading it out, even though it's a block, but it's kind of going to spread out to those locations as well.
That sounds pretty cool. And I was reading on it, and it goes from noon to 5. And there are going to be booths set up where people can actually work on projects and things?
Yes, we're going to have a creative reuse crafting area where you can make things from not only Pepsi throwaway stuff, but also just any kind of random stuff that we might be throwing out there at you. And then we also have a creative reuse instrument area where, believe it or not, at 12 noon, if anybody's listening and they want to go to this, be there at 12 noon, because that's when we're going to kick it off with the recycled drum circle. And it's pretty awesome. This is the first ever, okay? Because this event is actually a first ever in the nation. And they are going to be a combination of taiko drum, cajon drum, and drum buckets. And then everyone can just jump in with coffee cans or whatever buckets that they find around and just join in, and then it's just going to start off, boom, 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 then it's going to go bigger, bigger, bigger until everybody's all part of it.
So it is a big block party. Well, how were you notified that you actually won this Pepsi grant? Is it a grant or?
Yes, it is. Yeah. They informed me last year, and I wasn't even going to, put in for it, because I thought, personally, it's like the lottery. You never think you're going to win anything big like that, and especially Pepsi. I was like, wow. So I did it actually in the deadline of the last day, and I said, okay, I'll just put it in. What am I going to lose? They could just not even talk to me. And then I forgot all about it, and then all of a sudden I got this call. They said, well, please, call us, and we need to talk to you. And so I called, I called back, and they said, yeah, you won for environmental stewardship. They like the idea. Because what this Pepsi Refresh Grant is that you submit ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And if they like it, then you get awarded the grant. So they liked the idea. My grant, my idea was called Pepsi Helps Refresh Long Beach Through Creative Reuse. And they loved it. So it was basically asking the public to come together and have this unity in our community through creative reuse. And it was going to be engaging some of the other green type of local organizations, and just doing exactly what I was just explaining, some of the fun things of reusing Pepsi throwaway stuff.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Now, you're in the East Village, and we've talked about this before. Over the years, we've seen, a lot of changes in the East Village, and, shops have come and gone and stuff like that. But it looks like where you're at, things are starting to grow. Things are looking good. And how has that change been happening down there, and what's it been like?
It's been great. Yeah. Because when I was there, I was there in 2008, and believe it or not, people thought, you're crazy. What are you doing here? Because I was basically on the block by myself. And yeah. I just said, the vibes felt right, and Lion Art Supply around the corner was just a perfect match because they totally got what I was going to be doing. They were supplies, I was material, and we just started supporting each other. And then what happened was we got very, very blessed in the first year in 2008. I think that's when I met you, right? When we had University by the Sea. And that's how we ended up getting the plants treated on, you know, planted on our block.
Right.
Because they weren't even going to go that far. And I ended up being able to talk to Evan Kelly, who was part of it. And I said, oh, what are you guys going to do? And he goes, oh, you totally have to be part of this. And I said, okay, well, what do you need for me to do? So long story short, he made sure that we were part of that tree planting.
Right.
So that's where that started. And then progressively, even though I was still on the block pretty much by myself, I just started, you know, like cross-promoting the local businesses around. And then we got a grant. It was called the Neighborhood Partners Grant to put in a bike rack to beautify the block. So Trace Fukuhara from the Pacific Wind Arts Sculpture Garden, he designed a magnificent bike rack. I don't know if you guys have seen it, but it says Creative Reuse. It's the only one in the world. And so we put that in and then also planted some extra plantings near the trees. So from that, all of a sudden we started getting more attention. And people started looking, and then they started saying, this block kind of looks nice. So there was some interest generated from there. And I think that's what helped a lot. Because now we've got all, like, about five businesses now, and two more that are going to be opening up right on our block.
Excellent.
So.
Now, I noticed that what was it, like a preschool or something right there?
Right.
They're gone, but it looks like somebody else is going in there.
Yes.
Yeah.
We have a shop that's going in there on the Elm Street side, and then around a corner is two or three more, actually. One is called the State of Art Project. They're going to be opening up probably the day of. They're going to be participating in this event also. And then there's two little shops. One is called Dirty Mick. He has records. I want to say metal and what else, punks, and so he just opened up in this last week or so. And then also this other little cute shop called the Hallway Spectacle, they just opened up. And then on our side of the street, there's going to be a little shop. She's a salon, but also a little vintage kind of shop called the Downtown Darling. And then right next to us is one of the local artists, and his name is Levi Gladson. I don't know if you've heard of him.
No.
He's awesome. And so he's also going to be participating in this event, bringing some local artists and doing some live art. So that day is when you're going to really see everybody just coming out and blossoming, and it's just going to be a lot of fun. And Albertsons is even going to be participating as well.
Really?
They're going to have a special promo going on over there, and I can't say too much more after that.
They're close by, so it's all right there in the neighborhood. So that's very nice. How is I know Lions moved across the street, and there's some things going on over there. How has that impacted the neighborhood there? Has it really? I noticed there's a lot more events that seem to be going on now.
Oh yeah, it's awesome because now when we have, you know, you're familiar with the second Saturday Art Walk. So we had that, but now it's now Lions has their Lions at Night on the second Saturday of each month, and then also the Downtown Art Walk. So we've got three areas that are just moving and shaking, you know, on the second Saturday. So it's been quite busy now on Saturdays, on the second Saturday, that is.
Well, it must be nice to watch something grow, especially when you were the lone one on the block few years ago, to be able to sustain it and be a part of the growth is got to be rewarding.
Oh yeah, it's really nice, and I'm just so pleased that the city, I'm getting support from the city now, and like even with this event, I don't know if I mentioned already, but we're going to have free bike valet courtesy of the city of Long Beach, and also safe routes to schools will also be there. They're going to set up their, I guess you know them, but the bike rodeo,
right,
the rock climbing wall, and so they're also going to be participating as well.
Very nice, very nice. So how many different vendors, or I don't know if you call them vendors, but how many different events are going to be going on that night?
Well, we have. It's been growing really. Now that we're coming down to the wire, now I'm getting more phone calls and people say, I want to be part of it. I'm like, I'm sorry, too late. But we have so far confirmed. We have communities for clean ports. We have the Catalyst Communities, mm-hmm. which you know about
yep.
them. So Green Long Beach will be out there, and Pedal Movement, Foundation 101, LB Creative. It's just their whole umbrella, underneath their umbrella,
right.
all their communities. And then we'll have the Port of Long Beach, actually. And I just got confirmation from Southern California Edison. They will be participating. Bike Long Beach will be out there. And, I'm trying to think off the top of my head real quick. But we have probably about, I'd say, maybe 16 or 17 just info tables.
Right.
And then we have display tables, or display areas, which is going to be the Found Theater. They're going to do a display. And then our supporting artists, they'll have some eco kind of art displays. Like, for instance, the records, there's a... One group is Hot Green Designs.
Mm-hmm.
There are supporting artists, and they're the ones that make the vinyl record flowers and bowls. And then we'll also have different other artists that are under our umbrella that will be, you know, displaying their art. And then some of them will also be helping out at the creative crafting area and also the music area. But you're going to really, really love the music area. I think that's going to be the bomb there.
And this is going to be on Elm between...
3rd and 4th.
Between 3rd and 4th.
Yes.
Wow, I thought it sounded like it was a further.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it's
going to
be pretty cool. I mean, we're going to have live art as well. Also from, are you Sumato? He has, he's the curator for the Sipology Gallery.
Uh-huh, right.
So he's going to be bringing a team of artists, and they're going to be doing live art also.
Excellent. And is your daughter going to be participating?
Yes. Actually, she created some, what we're trying to encourage everyone is to make stuff from Pepsi, throwaway stuff. And so she created a Pepsi, purse out of a bottle. And you can put pencils in it, right? Did you want to talk about it? Or are you just walking around? She's kind of shy because she doesn't want to talk. But it's pretty awesome. And the Pepsi people, we had some Pepsi people come out, and they were just like, oh, my gosh. So the handle, of course, is made from the box, the can tabs and a shoelace or shoelace.
Oh, yeah.
And then she put a zipper to the bottle. And then inside she has, from the bottle cap, red, white, and blue felt scrap. And it's a ring that you can put on your finger for when you're sewing, and it has
a pin cushion. Yeah.
So that's a couple of things that she created. She brought it. And then, of course, this is just a cassette tape wallet.
Quite creative.
Standard.
Yeah. Well,
I carry one of those.
I want to know how you decided to make the CD yo-yos and get them over to the White House.
I made it better. And well, every kid wants a yo-yo, right? So we're out the White House girls.
And you just sent it to them and ended up getting the thank you card.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That's cool.
That's very cool.
I think you got to aim high, man. I like that.
Well, people thought that, you know, we were crazy. And even my
I think
own
you
mom,
might be, though.
Yeah.
You guys realize
I
that.
Know.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're crazy. It's working. That's the cool part. That is so cool.
Well, it was awesome because it was our very first piece of mail last year, in January. We actually sent it, the previous year. So it took 7 months, but we did get a card, and it's signed by the president and Mrs. Obama.
Well, they can, when you're the president, you can ensure that it'll be your first piece of mail for the year.
Yeah. They mailed it out right on December 31st. Really, it's postmarked, so we have it right there in the frame. It's really cool. It's very cool.
Very nice.
And then we also just recently got a recognition letter for this event from Senator Feinstein as well.
Excellent.
So she wrote some very nice, kind words.
Yeah. Well, where do you go from here? I mean, you've already shot big. Shot to the top.
Oh,
where do you go first?
No, because one of the things that since we've been running this business, and you know, and I like to say we're just the founders because the store belongs to the people, and so that's what we're there for, is to serve the people. And one of the things that we uncovered is that not only is there this huge gap of all these things that end up in the trash, but there's also this huge gap of unemployment of individuals between the ages of 40 and 65 who could totally run a small creative reuse shop just like what we're doing. So we want to be a model, and that's one of the things that we wrote to the president and told him about, was that to consider using us as a model to start a whole new industry of jobs, and also to help stop all these things from ending up in the landfills. Because picture the universities, the schools, every place could have a little shop, not a big one, but little ones across the country in every neighborhood.
Right.
Because if we really want to be green, we shouldn't have to drive to our nearest creative reuse shop. We should be able to just bike or ride or take public transportation. And why not? There's just so much of this stuff. I'm not kidding. It's a ton of this stuff. I mean, I look in here, and I'm sorry, but you can see there's stuff in here.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, but you know the value. You
I do all
it.
This stuff. Yeah,
yeah,
I mean.
You save it, and you can reuse it.
Swoop will tell you. Mm-hmm. And my wife will tell you, too. I don't throw away anything till it's for sure. And I have a saying. It can probably be fixed if you've got some duct tape and some zip ties. I can probably fix it. And I've shown Swoop and I've been in places where I'm like, oh, no, I can fix that. Hold on a second.
We're good.
See? It's not going to last forever, but it'll get us through the event.
Oh, no. Remembering, going back, the grassroots days, because when I was growing up, people always ask me, how did I – you remember creative reuse and what were my first experiences. And I tell them that my dad, believe it or not, I got a lot from him. He used to make, I know you all know about Cesar Chavez.
Mm-hmm.
And so my dad in the Bay Area, he used to work with Cesar Chavez. And my dad used to make all the round Welga signs,
mm-hmm.
the strike signs. And we actually did them in our garage. So that was really my first, I think, if I can remember, first big lesson of creative reuse, because he used to take the cardboard from one of the construction companies,
mm-hmm.
and he would gather it. And I remember in the garage on the ground, we took the top of the lid of the garbage cans, and that was our stencil, the round. So my little brother would sit on top of it, and then we would go around it like with a marker, and make that was our round circle. And then my dad would cut it out, and then maybe that's why I'm a little off, because we were like spray painting in the garage, and that's not good. But hey, we're still here. But we would actually, that was the fun part for us. He would let us spray paint, and we loved that. So we would spray paint the red. And then they have a outside stencil that after the red part was dry, then we could put the stencil over it with the eagle and the UFW,
mm-hmm.
and then we spray paint it black. And then when I tell people this, they laugh because we're the original dip stickers. We used to use the sticks, that attach to the signs. The sticks came from the different plantings in San Francisco, because my dad used to also do landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever the trees were strong enough to be, to stand up on their own, they removed the sticks.
Right.
Well, my dad used to take all the sticks, and he kept all that. And then he would cut them in half, and then he would fill up a big old bucket with green paint. And then we would dip and then line them up against the wall in the garage. So they say, "Hey, you dipstickers," you call us that. So that was our job too. But that was creative reuse back in in the 60s.
Yeah,
and that's what we grew up with.
I remember when my dad would pull out a nail out of something where he was in hammer, and if it was straight enough to reuse, then we used it.
Oh, yeah.
If I was hammering, I'd bend it in half. But but the ones that if it was straight enough for reuse, we'd reuse it. And that's just the way we did. And I think we've gotten away from that a lot. We've gotten real disposable over the last few decades. So.
Well, I think the recession and everything has made everyone think twice now. And they really are thinking, especially people that have had to, because of the recession, lose their storages.
Mm-hmm.
And they just realize that, wow, if I have to put it in storage, I must not need it.
Right.
And they're paying all this money for storage of stuff that
they're not using, obviously, and then they can't afford them anymore. So they've been just kind of nicely giving us a lot of them.
Well, that's good. Well, let everybody know what your address is and how to get a hold of you.
Okay, we're at 320 Elm Avenue in Long Beach in the East Village Arts District. And our website is longbeachdepot.org. And we can be reached at area code 562-437-9999.
Excellent. And Lisa, is there anything else that you wanted to let the people know that we didn't cover?
Oh, let's just all get together and have, you know, build unity in our community through creative reuse.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you. And everybody make sure they go to the Pepsi, what's the exact title?
Pepsi Refresh Creative Reuse Day.
Yeah, February 27th. That's Sunday from noon to 5. So we'll be there. And hopefully we'll see you there. You've been listening to Swoops World on Blog Talk Radio, and this is about the end of the primetime show. Those of you who follow us over to ztalkradio.com, and we'll be doing our late night show. We're happy to have Lisa with us tonight, and before that we had Marty Rooley with us. And tonight on the late night show, our first guest is Lance Keller from Digital Legacy. And after that, it's the usual fun with the LB Food Review.
And mayhem.
Do we have any C. Liz late night snacking tonight?
Not tonight. Not tonight.
Well, we got T-Bone Sports on tap, right?
That's what I'm talking about.
Well, thank you for listening to Primetime, and we'll be back on Primetime tomorrow on Z-Talk at 4 o'clock. But check us out right now, 10 o'clock. We'll be back on ZTalkRadio.com. Good night, all.
Good night.